Skyline's new Chicken Chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's Chicken Chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic, coming up this week. Revenge is best served cold, but it tastes canny enough piping hot. No time wasted as Howe and the boys thrash Man United. We did beat them and we did love it. Could this season revive a rivalry? But there's no rest for the Willy. Back-to-back London games this week. Hello everyone, this is Pod on the Tyne. I am Taylor Payne. No Jacob Whitehead this week, unfortunately. We hope you're enjoying your break, JW. But I have got two lovely chaps with me, basking in the glory of a beautiful Monday morning. It's George Cock and Chris Woff. George, how are you doing? You feeling all right?
Oh, what a time to be alive, Taylor. There's no, we're recording this at a slightly unusual time, aren't we? It's quite early in the morning, but it's time to deliver. What a time to be alive. No time to waste, is there?
Absolutely, there's no time to waste. Chris, no. How the devil are you, sir? Are you all right?
I don't think I'm quite as good as you are this morning in terms of chipperness. I think you had a better evening than I did in terms of humus. I think you had a few more pints than I did by the sounds of it this morning.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. What a day, though. What a day. What an afternoon. What a night. I can't remember most of it, but it was brilliant. I'm presuming it was brilliant. Oh, yes. Newcastle United served up a fantastic win against Man United at St James's Park yesterday. What a day. What a day, Chris. 2-0, and it flattered Man United. We could have battered them.
Yeah, it was one of those matches where you tried to think back of any chances that Man United really had, because Newcastle was so dominant, apart from Wout Weghorst hitting the side netting and Andy Martial having a shot blocked, they really didn't threaten at all, and that was because Newcastle was so brilliant at both ends of the pitch. I mean, the wasteful first half, Newcastle, and at half time, George and I sort of turned to each other, and it was almost that fear of, is this the old Newcastle coming back? Is this the same story which had afflicted Newcastle in the first sort of 8 weeks of 2023, that they're going to be made to pay for wasted chances? And you thought at some point Manchester United are going to come, but A, they didn't, because they didn't have the quality to, and B, because Newcastle didn't allow them to. Newcastle just kept going, continued to swarm them after a sticky maybe 15 minutes of the second half where it was almost like both sides were almost measuring each other up and nothing really happened. But then the final half hour, Newcastle just swarmed on top of them and ran away with it. And it should have been 2-0 really does flatter Manchester United. It was a complete demolition and one of the best performances, I think, of the Eddie Howe era, which, considering there's been some very good ones, this one was certainly right up there.
I totally agree with all of that. Should have been another 5-0, really, shouldn't it? But I think when we had that conversation, Chris, I think we did have a point. I mean, it wasn't like the 5-0 back in 96. It wasn't even like the 1-0 earlier on in that year, when Man United got that spawny win, when Schmeichel was like getting absolutely in the way of everything and making ridiculous saves. De Gea didn't have to make those saves. And so I think that was a bit of a concern, and I think there is, so I'm now like starting with a negative, which I don't really want to at all, but there is something sort of not quite clicking still in that sense for Newcastle. They're not working goalkeepers enough, and I do think that is something that has to be a bit of a, you know, an issue moving forward. But the brilliant thing about that performance was that because they couldn't do it themselves, they forced a mistake out of Manchester United, and I love that. There was, sorry, sound a bit Kevin Keegan in there. I love that. But I did love it. But they forced that mistake out of Manchester United, and yeah, that was really good.
Yeah, this should have been well clear by half time, and there was a couple of chances. Isak had a great header saved really well by De Gea, and then the follow up by Willock, which I don't know, he can't do anything with it. He just kicks it straight at him and De Gea's on the floor and it hits him and bounces away. Longstaff has a great drive from distance which just misses. And you think, oh, come on, is it going to be one of those days again? Is it just not going to come? But I have to say, it's unbelievable watching Alexander Isak. And I was quite close to the pitch yesterday. And there was times when I was just mesmerised by him. The way he runs, the way he takes the ball in his stride, the intelligence of his play, his movement, it was just fantastic yesterday. And Man United's defence just didn't know how to cope with him, Chris, did they?
Well, we're going to get on to the sort of pace and time-wasting allegations of the game, but actually Isak does the opposite of that, and there was the Longstaff chance when he nods it just wide of the near post, which came from the fact that Isak ran down the right-hand channel, wins a throw-in, takes the throw-in himself because he's so keen to get the ball back on the pit, and eventually it gets switched to the other side, Saint-Maximin crosses and Longstaff heads. That's what he brings. He brings a pace. He always chases down on the goalkeeper. He sprints after him. You can see him then turn at a teammate as if to say, why didn't you follow me? I need you to follow the press.
Yeah.
And he has really brought a fresh dimension to this Newcastle side. We already thought that they really were intense and high press in the first half of the season. Had a few weeks where that sort of dropped a little bit. But Isak has brought almost it and then some. It's a different level that he brings. And he didn't have loads of opportunities in the game. He had the header, which was a very good save from De Gea. He said afterwards he thought he should have scored. But apart from that, he didn't have loads of clear-cut chances. But he, as George said, was a key reason behind why Newcastle scored the first goal, not only because he laid it off for Bruno to then cross to Saint-Maximin to head across, but also because he was the one who led the press, which led to the mistake and Man United having to play it out from the back.
Chris wrote a really good piece about Isak towards the end of last week, which I'd recommend everyone have a look at, talking about exactly this, how he's kind of fitted in the last kind of couple of games in particular. But there were some interesting quotes from Alan Shearer in that piece where he sort of compares Isak to Wilson. I mean, not in a bad way, but you know, Wilson is a centre forward, he's a goal scorer, and Isak isn't that. He's what Alan calls a modern forward, and he sort of says he's almost that sort of personification of that sort of modern forward, someone who's athletic, who's sort of gymnastic, who's quick, and you know, that's been the fashion in the game recently. You know, Salah, Mane, they're not centre forward, even Messi, even Ronaldo before he became kind of quite static. You know, they're not traditional centre forwards fixed in one position. They're very fluid across the front line. Maybe it's the first time we've really sort of seen Newcastle have a player like that. I mean, a really good one. But he's just brought a different dimension in the last few weeks. Yeah, just quality, absolute quality.
He really, really has. And Erik ten Hag set up Manchester United in such a weird way yesterday. It was a very bizarre midfield. I'm not sure what he was thinking, but Sabitzer and Bruno Fernandes playing sort of... What were they playing as, Chris? They were almost playing as a...
They weren't quite double pivots. I don't think they were actually double pivots. but in terms of the midfield setup, I will say that what I enjoyed during the first half yesterday was, I've never seen George so excited about the fact that he thought that he actually spotted something tactically. He turned to me after about 10 minutes and he's like, Scott McTominay is man-marking Bruno Guimaraes. He's man-marking.
That's not what happened.
It is.
You said, where is Scott McTominay playing? And I, using the eyes of experience, the brain of a man with a head and the ears of a gnome, I studied the pitch, and it didn't take me very long to work out. And I'm going to start using my fingers here to start pointing in a very tactical, coachy way. And I'm big on XG, very massive.
You are, yeah.
But I've always been big on XG. But he was man marking Bruno, our Bruno. And it was strange because he only did it for 10, 15 minutes. And then McTominay then stayed high up the pitch, and at that point, I don't know what he was doing. But the idea was, and he was like touch tight to him for a while, but it didn't work. And then, I mean, Bruno ended up having a fantastic game.
I mean, there's that clip of Bruno where he completely sells Wout Weghorst just outside his own box, which is just brilliant. Where he basically flicks it back between his own leg and then goes onto his left foot and just leaves him for dead. It's just absolutely brilliant when you see it.
It was glorious. It was glorious that just outside his own box, 7 minutes into the game. Why not? It was one of those days, though, wasn't it? The sun was beaming down. Everything seemed to click.
God, it wasn't beaming down in the press box.
Was it freezing?
Fucking freezing.
Well, I was in the East Stand and I had to have my sunglasses on for the entire game. So it was beautiful over there. But yeah, it just felt like everything was going right. It felt like it was clicking. You know, we missed a few chances. They continued to push forward. And the goal by Willock, it's a wonderful piece of football. It's a great move. Isak involved again, finds that little ball around the corner for Bruno Guimaraes, who, when he chips that ball to the back post, everybody around me went, the chance is gone. But that's the East Stand, that's what happened. and then Zalmanson Maximin nods it back across, and there's Joe Willock with, you know, an easier goal he'll never score, Chris. It was just a brilliant moment.
It was, and I mean, I think the best, one of the best things, which I didn't notice at the time, but watching the highlights last night, is Willock's miss in the first half when he puts it over the bar. If you see Alexander Isak's reaction, yeah. He goes down as if he's been shot. It's absolutely amazing, because Sam Maximin goes up with his arms in the air, but Isak goes down as if he's been shot. I mean, there was like that, and Willock had missed two great opportunities, but it's the fact that he was getting into those positions. And if you see the way that the goal unfolds, first of all, Isak does well to get in front of his man on the edge of the box. Bruno is then pushing to get into the box, a lovely ball to him, and as you say, it goes to the back post. And when he initially did that, I was sort of, I'm not quite sure about this, but you've got Sam Maximin at the back, just beyond the back post, you've got Jacob Murphy at the back post, and then you've got Joe Willock in the centre. So Newcastle have basically overloaded the box. There's no Man United player anywhere near them. And it just shows that willingness and desire they had, and that Joe Willock just kept on getting it in that position. And he does miss too many chances. He had that extraordinary run when he first came to Newcastle, where he set the record. But actually this season, he has been missing opportunities, yet he gets into those positions. And if he adds that to his game, then there's all this talk about England and should he be in there. And he said after the game, he reiterated, this is what I want to be in that squad. He described himself as being unique in what he thinks he can bring to the England side.
Yeah.
But he needs to score those goals. If he does, then I think that it will be unquestionable that he has to be in that squad. He will make a case for himself beyond Conor Gallagher or anyone like that, because he simply will just be the all-round midfielder then, and he has brought that extra element to Newcastle. It was a really, really well-worked goal. And from that point on, you never thought Newcastle were going to lose it, because Man United just didn't seem to have another gear to go up to. You always thought they were going to, but they just never did.
And there was there was lots of Wembley revenge chat in the press, wasn't in the build-up to the game, but our camp were insistent they didn't have any sort of vengeance on their minds. After the game, though, Willock did say he was delighted to cast aside the disappointment of Wembley.
Yeah, I feel like losing in the final is probably one of the worst defeats you can have in football, you know. So we was very upset, but we tried to use that in a good way, you know, and I feel like we've done that today. It was a brilliant game, to be honest. Good 2-0 win, and to win in front of our fans today was even more special.
You seem to be motivated as well, and I know that the manager said that he spoke about their manager's comments about time wasting in your team talk beforehand. Is that frustrating to hear other managers talk about that? It seemed there was an extra intensity about you guys today.
Yeah, I actually did see that comment, to be honest, but the manager, he said that before the game, you know, and I mean, I feel like other managers are going to say what they want to say, you know. We have to just focus on what we have to do, and I feel like we've done that today, and we beat them 2-0 with a convincing win.
I enjoyed that last bit where he said convincing win, because he was like, he was almost holding back, and then he said, and it was a convincing win. I mean, I enjoyed that sort of like little remark at the end.
You know, adding on to that, Dan Burn said in his Sky interview, we owed them one, and you know, and he talked about that relationship that Newcastle fans have with Manchester United. And this was, you know, this was something that I wrote about over the weekend too. We owe them more than this, let's be honest. I mean,
yeah,
you know, and it certainly doesn't make up for the final, because, you know, that was a sort of huge chance and a huge game and an opportunity to finally end that way. But it was a brilliant response.
It was.
And, you know, it could be enough to get Newcastle into the Champions League at the end of it. But it was a convincing 2-0 win. That was the best part about it. It wasn't fluky. It wasn't Newcastle holding on. It wasn't, you know, one of those things where they're trying to eke out a 1-0 or a draw or whatever. It was a convincing victory that was absolutely deserved.
There was a lovely moment as well with Joe Willock juggling the ball on his head, and he ran about 20, 30 yards with the ball just bouncing on his head. It was beautiful. It was almost like Juninho back in the day. It was a lovely piece of skill.
Come with me, Maggie.
And our subs as well, they had a great view of that goal, all lined up to come on, weren't they, George? And then everything went south, or north,
so,
depends on which way you look at it.
It was just a tiny little moment. In fact, there were two sort of moments, really, leading up to that first goal, and Chris has mentioned one of them. But yeah, no, Newcastle had three subs stripped and ready to come on, and they were, one of them was Callum Wilson, who I asked Eddie Howe about this afterwards, and he just said no comment to it. But I think he was, you know, you assume, because it happened later, that he was coming on to replace Isak, and then, yeah, you know, the other two subs, Anthony Gordon and who was the other
Joe
one?
Linton.
And Joe Linton.
Joe Linton!
And they were there, and they were getting their instructions. It was a Man U goal kick, and finally Howe looks at the fourth official, because the fourth official saying, what's going on? And Howe said, no, leave it. And then, this is another thing that does my head in football. I'm sure I've talked about it before. This idea of taking those short goal kicks, playing out from the back.
Yeah.
Man United did that repeatedly during this game, and they didn't look convincing. It's like this is a point of principle to the point of absurdity. De Gea does not look comfortable doing that. I get, you know, you don't want to give the ball away, but that's what happened. And in the moment that followed, Isak was sensational. He was brilliant the way he pressed and pressed again. And of course, with pressing, it has to be focused, it has to be intelligent, it has to be everyone knowing what they're doing, because otherwise, you know, you run the risk of losing the ball and then the press being avoided and then you're in trouble. But they were sensational. And Isak, it was Varane he pressed, they gave the ball away. Man United had the ball, but they weren't in possession of it. You know, it was like they were, what do we do now? And then yeah, suddenly Newcastle have got it in that dangerous position. And then you see that rapid series of passes, and Isak, when he did that press, turned to the crowd, waved his arms, and there was that, you know, visceral response. And it was a moment. It was 30 seconds, a minute, where Howe's taken a decision on the touchline, and it's worked brilliantly. And then the team and crowd have been in absolute harmony together. And it was just a thing of beauty. It was, as I said earlier, Newcastle had struggled to kind of find their way in front of goal, and they forced Man United to kind of give it to them. And
yeah,
there's something really beautiful in that.
There really is. Them three subs came on and they injected a little bit of life into everything, Crisp. And there was a wonderful moment with Joe Linton down by the East Stand where he, when he first came on, he put a tackle in, the ball bobbled up, and he diving headed the ball out of play, got up and screamed at the East Stand. Like, you know, just pure rage and emotion, and everyone screamed along with him. And there was a few times when that happened. Bruno did it, Dan Byrne did it towards the end, and the players seemed like actively trying to get the crowd involved and trying to bring them into the game and make them part of the whole event, don't they? It's like an active thought now that they're doing it.
Yeah, and I think that was part of the game plan. Yes, I mean, Howe has spoken, when I've asked him previously about turning around Newcastle's home form, he said that part of what he knew that Newcastle needed to do was to get the crowd involved and to make it exciting, to make a front foot, to make sure they are, because then it is that extra power. And it is still remarkable that since Eddie Howe joined in November 2021, Newcastle have only lost at home in the Premier League to Manchester City and Liverpool. No other team has come to St James's Park and taken 3 points away. And that is a remarkable record, and it's part of the reason why they avoided relegation comfortably in the end from a very difficult position, and why they now sit in third place in the Premier League. But when you mentioned Joe Linton, I'll be honest, going into the game until an hour before kickoff, I was fairly confident that I thought Newcastle would win. And then when I saw the team sheet and Joe Linton wasn't in it, I actually thought that was a big call from Howe. And I was less confident after that because of how important a player he has been in big matches.
Yeah.
I thought there was no way that Eddie Howe will not try to fit him into the team somewhere. But he rewarded the side who won at Nottingham Forest, even though Alan Saint-Maximin came off at half-time in that game. And yes, he's reiterated that he had a hamstring problem, but there was also frustration in the way that he played. But he stuck with that same team. He likes to stick with inside. And they did deliver. Jacob Murphy had his moments. He put on that very good cross early on in the first half for Isak's chance. The team selection worked again. And now Joe Linton has to fight his way to get back into the side. But also what is refreshing is, as we said at Man City, when he could make a triple sub, he didn't turn out into the triple sub in the end, but he was going to do that. And to look at that bench and think, actually, he can bring on Anthony Gordon, a £40 to £45 million footballer. He can bring on Joe Linton, who's been, one of the first names on his team sheet previously. He can bring on Callum Wilson, who for so long has been the linchpin of the side. And actually, Newcastle have strength for the final half hour. They can make changes to materially positively affect the game. And that's not even mentioning Elliot Anderson and the fact that obviously Miguel Almiron's injured. So that is what is great to see. And I did think that Joe Linton, Gordon and Wilson all made impacts in different ways.
And while we're on the subject of midfielders, we also have to, I think we should have to pay tribute to Sean Longstaff again, who I thought was absolutely sensational in that match yesterday. I really did. And another one that
he was.
Alan Shearer mentioned on Match of the Day is, you know, should be in the England conversation. And he certainly should be. But I think Willock talked about the team feeding off the crowd. And that was totally in evidence yesterday. I mean, it's a cliche to talk about Newcastle fans because, you know, they're, you know, great fans, all the rest of it. I mean, we're part of it. We know about all of that. But yesterday was one of those days where you do worry about the damage to your own ears when, you know, when the first goal went in. It was astonishing, the noise. The noise, it was like there was no room for a coherent thought. I mean, I've not had a coherent thought for 30, 40 years anyway.
They don't come along often, do they?
There was no room for it in your head because the noise forced everything out.
Yeah.
And all you can do in those moments is just sort of look around and try and take it in. And the fact that St James's is like that again is just so precious. You can't be underestimated. But team and fans need each other. That's what the club can be. It's what the club should be. I think we all thought, I think we thought in the build-up to this game that it would feel like a big match, that we knew that St James's would be up for it. We thought the team would be up for it. But for it to kind of play out in the way it did was just absolutely magnificent.
It was. And other than Anthony Martial's deflected shot that went wide, a little mini wobble from Nick Pope, which actually nearly led to a really good chance for Newcastle when Willock broke, there was no real stress, was there? And it was lovely for Callum Wilson to come on off the bench and seal the win. I've no idea what Luke Shaw's doing, giving away free kicks like that in that position, but he just handed the ball to us on a plate and a lovely ball into the box from Trippier. And he's got the freedom of the box, Wilson, hasn't he? And Ten Hag's just taken off both of his centre-halves in the minutes leading up to it. Absolutely no idea why he's done that. Don't know what's going on, but I'm so chuffed for Callum Wilson, and he looked so happy for nodding that ball in, Chris. It was just, a lovely moment. And it was the goal that St James's Park needed, wasn't it? Everyone was on the edge of the seat until that goal went in, and then it was like a big release.
It was, and I know that George is an XG lover, and Newcastle did have the highest XG against Manchester United this season at 4.04, which just shows that the amount of opportunities they had and the sort of dominance they had. And if you just look at the stats of the game itself, Newcastle had less possession in terms of 46%, but they had 26 shots to Man United's 6. They had 6 shots on target to Man United's 1. And De Gea made a really, really good save from Joe Linton from a corner as well. But the free kick from Trippier and then Wilson just being unmarked, it was bizarre. And as you say, Laurie Whitwell, our Man United reporter, was there, turned to me when he was he's taking his 2 centre-backs off, and I can't understand why.
Yeah.
And it felt muddled. Man United felt muddled. They didn't have any answers to the questions that Newcastle were posing of them. And it was a great moment for Wilson. I asked Howe in the pre-match press conference about Wilson and about how important the international break was for him and why he needed the international break, because Wilson himself had said on his BBC podcast that this has been an important time for him. And Howe said, because when you're in the heat of a season and you have match after match, you can't focus on getting a player, building up the load again, physical load, as Wilson has needed. And he's had niggles, he's had injuries, had the World Cup, and he needed this to have a little bit of a break and then to really focus on his fitness for a week or so. And it's going to take him a few weeks to get back to full match sharpness. But that goal will have done him the world of good because he really did need it. And it means that hopefully he can push Isak, and that will only just raise Newcastle's levels even further.
Yeah, and there was a few comments pre-match that we mentioned earlier on about the ball in play and Newcastle liking to slow the game down and being time wasters and all that. It wasn't really an issue for us, was it? Even a 2-0 up, we were still looking for more goals. And as it was at Wembley, the prime time waster yesterday was David De Gea, who was taking ages over his goal kicks in the first half. And we can dip into Eddie Howe's post-match press conference because he had a very clear message on this subject.
I'm pleased you brought that up, actually, because I want to make one thing very clear. We want the ball in play. We play a quick game. I don't get where this time-wasting nonsense has come from, because it's not us. And you saw today, we wanted the ball back in play as quickly as possible. High energy, high tempo, ball in play. Well, I think I'll always say I always stand up for my team. I always stand up for what I believe is right. If something's not accurate, then I think naturally you want to put the right point across. As I said, we want the ball in play. That's the type of team we are.
That last bit, Taylor, is interesting, because that was a very specific question about him and Ten Hag squaring up to each other, and Eddie Howe put his finger sort of close to Ten Hag's face, and that was at a moment when the Man United bench had sort of gone spare at Nick Pope dallying on possession in the second half. And the reason Newcastle were furious were, as you said beforehand, was that De Gea was taking an age with his goal kicks in the first half. I mean, within a few minutes in the first half. And, you know, we're very lucky. We're just behind the dugouts. And Jason Tindall, as you would absolutely expect, was pointing this out to the fourth official, you know, and they're moaning about us, you know, saying that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I mean, I'm not saying we owe an apology to Newcastle, because that's not quite true. I mean, we've had a bit of fun. We've had a lot of fun about the idea of Newcastle and shithousing. And that's because it's funny. And, you know, let's be honest, it's funny. Seeing Jacob Murphy come off the pitch yesterday, tapping his watch, his imaginary wristwatch, having a go, it's funny. But for the first time in a long time, we're seeing a Newcastle team who will stand up for themselves. They won't take any crap from other teams. And they'll use every trick in the book in order to get a win. I love seeing that. I love it. But it masks the fact that Newcastle are a good team. It's become a thing in a way that sort of downplays what the achievement of Eddie Howe this season, which isn't just about getting Newcastle into the top four. They haven't got into the top four by cheating. They haven't got into the top four by time wasting. They've got into it by being a really, really good team. And as he says, They're an intense side, but they're an attack-minded side. They want to take you on. And there was no need for time-wasting yesterday. There was none of that, because Newcastle was so, so much better. Now, the facts show that in some ways Ten Hag is right, that in terms of the ball in play, it's lower for Newcastle. This is certainly before the weekend. Opta showed this, that Newcastle are bottom of the table when it comes to having ball in play this season. But they're an incredibly intense side who play in these bursts of energy and power and pace.
Yeah.
And so I suppose they have to find moments where they can get their breath back. And they're very skilled at doing that. They know how to do all that. But the idea that somehow that, you know, that they've shithoused themselves to third is a nonsense. It was incredible listening to both Ten Hag and Luke Shaw after that match yesterday saying that Newcastle wanted it more than Manchester United. That, you know, that it was about desire. I mean, Luke Shaw said it wasn't about quality, but he got that wrong. It was also about quality. Newcastle were much better than Manchester United. But yeah, all that stuff, they got their own back a bit yesterday, and it was fucking great to see, wasn't it? Let's be honest.
It was. And the League Cup defeat aside, it's 4 points off them in the league now. And we're kind of rekindling that rivalry, aren't we, George? It's not quite there, but it's coming back. And, you know, Newcastle and Man United have gone head-to-head a few times this season, and we've got the better of them as well in certain occasions. You know, the League Cup would have been beautiful to win that. But, my God, yesterday really started to make up for it, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I wrote about this sort of for the weekend. And, you know, if you talk to Manchester United fans, we had Andy Mitten on the show last week, and sort of, you know, I was like trying to push him a little bit on this subject. And he was lovely about Newcastle, you know, very complimentary.
Yeah, he was.
But there's no sense from his perspective or their perspective that we're a rival to them. And totally and utterly sort of understand that and get that. I suppose what I was trying to sort of say was that there was a time in the mid-90s when Keegan said, tell Alex we're coming after the title, and then did exactly that, that Newcastle could have been Arsenal. You know, they could have, you know, they have a historic traditional rivalry with Leeds, and of course with Man City, and of course with Liverpool too. But there was a moment when Newcastle were up there, and there was, the 95-96, there was Keegan's rant, there was the 5-0 the next season, there was a charity shield in between, there was Newcastle beating Manchester United to Alan Shearer's signature, and then there were a few moments after that, and of course then it drifted away. But when the League Cup final came along, it was that feeling of, they feel like the right opponents for Newcastle to be playing, and that it was something, you know, it was a bit weird. And definitely there was that feeling post-Wembley that Newcastle owed them one. And I think really the key thing is that it's so good and nice and welcome for Newcastle to be taking on Manchester United, who are very different now than they were in the 90s, I get that, but to be taking them on as equals, and if it's just in our heads, not even in theirs, we are their rivals again, and it feels great.
It really does. And Chris, two games coming up this week, and we're recording this bright and early on Monday morning, so if Everton get a point or better tonight against Spurs, that's basically the perfect weekend, isn't it, for Newcastle United?
Yeah, I mean, other results went the way that Newcastle would want them to. Teams below them drop points. Obviously, they've leapfrogged Man United on goal difference. They're up to third. And it very much is in Newcastle's hands now, between now and the end of the season. The Champions League is there for them to go and try and grasp. And they have some difficult fixtures coming up, including three away games in a row. They still have Arsenal to come to St James's Park, Spurs to come to St James's Park. But you'd fancy Newcastle against anyone on Tyneside at the moment, and in general away games as well. I think that they've got a heck of an opportunity in the next few weeks. I think West Ham winning in a strange sort of way probably was a decent result for Newcastle, because maybe there isn't as much pressure on West Ham to make sure they win on Wednesday night as well. Obviously, they'll have increased confidence to a certain degree, but I do think maybe that aids them a little bit, and they can really attack these next few matches and go into them with the pressure is still off them. I know they are third, and you could say it's theirs to lose, but nobody expected them to be in this position. And I do think there is more pressure on Spurs to get into the top four than there is on Newcastle. And actually, it's not just about the top four now, it's about third place. Third place looked gone a few weeks ago. Yeah. It looked like Man United were going to sail and possibly even challenge for second. Whereas now, Man United are in a dip form, that their away form is terrible. They looked a shambles at times yesterday, primarily because Newcastle made them, but also they didn't really offer anything of their own accord. And so that would be brilliant as well, because there is still the outside chance that other teams could progress in European competitions. Chelsea could win the Champions League, Man United could win the Europa League, and then that would mean that only the top three actually automatically qualify for the Champions League, because you can only have five Premier League teams in it. So getting the third place is the one that you need to really secure Champions League football at the moment, and that is now back on the table.
Absolutely. Right then, let's have a little break, chaps, and we'll be back in just a moment. But before that, get yourself over to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to pick up a subscription to The Athletic and pay just £1.99 a month for your first year. Back in a moment.
I'll tell you, honestly, I would love it if we beat them. Love it.
So Newcastle United released their published accounts this week. Chris, you did a bit of reporting on that. There was the headline number really is a £70 million loss, or one and a bit Alexander Isaks. I suppose you could look at it that way, couldn't you?
I mean, you could look at it that way, yeah. it's always very complicated when accounts come out, A, because they are actually for the last season. So these cover the final few months of the Mike Ashley era, and then also the first 9 months post takeover. So this is the 2021-2022 season. So they are already out of date by the time that they come out. Also, the headline figures don't necessarily represent the exact figures that you would then look at. For example, so Newcastle lost 70.7 million after tax in terms of the way you look at it in accounting terms, but that doesn't then directly transfer into what they've lost in FFP. Right. So over 3 years, rolling 3 years in the Premier League, you're allowed to lose, quote-unquote, £105 million. That 70.7 million does not automatically go into that, because that includes all costs and you have things which are exempt. For example, part of that is more than £3 million which has been spent to improve the training ground. That isn't included in FFP figures. Women's team costs, academy costs, infrastructure costs, they're not included in FFP. But still, even within that, what these accounts do show is, as we've said so many times previously, is the need for Newcastle to increase their commercial revenues. They're going to announce deals at some point soon. We keep expecting them and they haven't been announced yet, but they need them because these figures are unsustainable going forward. This was financed by the ownership putting in money to be able to finance this would be the January 2022 window, when obviously they signed five players for more than £90 million. Subsequently, they're revealing the accounts, they've put in another £150 million. So they're basically nearly £250 million has been spent on players. The wage budget has gone up massively, and will only have gone up further although the figures, again, this is where it becomes even more complicated. The previous year's accounts only covered 11 months, whereas this year's covers 12 months. So that means that the part of the increase from year on year in the wages is just because of the natural extra month. But still, it still has gone up significantly. And basically, yes, what this shows is at the moment, FFP is fine. I've spoken to Kieran Maguire for a deep dive I'm going to do on the account over the next couple of days on The Athletic. He's a football finance lecturer at university, and he also hosts the Price of Football podcast. And he believes that Newcastle still have significant room within FFP, but to avoid doing it at Everton, as he put it, they need commercial revenues to increase significantly, and also getting into Europe would really aid them because it would then allow them to get increased revenues. The Champions League itself, just to qualify, is worth £30 million, so that in itself would increase revenues further.
Oh, Chris, I could listen to you talk about football finance all day. Honestly, it's just wonderful, isn't it? It just sets the hairs up on the arm. And have you thought about doing, you know, those audio books that people listen to help them go to sleep? You should really consider that, mate. That could be a nice little revenue stream for you.
This is the problem, though, isn't it? Because as soon as Newcastle fans hear people talk about, you know, FFP,
it's glazed over.
Whatever. Anyway, who are we signing this summer?
Yeah.
Yeah, it shows exactly sort of what they did in January. It does kind of illustrate that January, sorry, and it does illustrate sort of what a big move that was. You dread to think what might be the financial situation if Newcastle hadn't managed to stay up. But of course they did, and the next stage has to be to start bringing money in, to start recycling players, to do all the rest of it.
Yeah, and as Chris mentioned at the start, it was a bit of an unusual accounting period, wasn't it? It was lots of post-takeover costs, including the Steve Bruce sacking as well, Chris. It's an interesting one to have that in the books, but it is there in all of its glory and gory detail.
Well, it is, yeah, and the significant cost of it, which obviously George and I had relayed at the time, and he'd been given this contract by Mike Ashley, where essentially it seemed that he basically always had 3 years on his deal rolling, and it meant that the owners, to make that call, they obviously kept him in charge for the first game against Spurs, and then decided after that that they simply had to make the change. But it cost a heck of a lot of money to remove him, and that is another thing which had to be financed by part of the money that was injected at the club and has subsequently been injected at the club, is also to cover day-to-day running costs. Newcastle's wage-to-turnover ratio has gone up from 76.2% the previous year, albeit over 11 months, to 94.6%, and usually clubs would say that a healthy sort of wage-to-turnover ratio would be sort of 70 to 80%, and so Newcastle are significantly above that. Obviously, we're saying wages have gone up further as well, so until turnover goes up, that's why Newcastle are trying to hold back that wage budget from ballooning too much. They don't pay anywhere near the sort of so-called big six. I think they're ranked ninth or roughly now in the Premier League for last year's full wage budget. They're still behind Everton, which just shows you all the problems they've got, and still behind Leicester, who are in the relegation zone this season. But there's a huge gap between them still and the so-called big six in terms of wages.
You'd imagine those commercial deals that Newcastle are looking at, though, George, they'll be there or thereabouts soon enough, and the money will start coming in. The owners seem very keen to start bringing in as much money as possible.
Yeah, we know that the rules changed when the takeover happened, basically. So everything has to be, you know, everything has to be sort of signed off through the Premier League. So it's never been a case that they can just go out and get big Saudi companies to sponsor them, for example. They've got to show that it's everything's market value. It's taken a long time, but we are at the point now that that's going to start happening, and I would expect it to soonish now, before the end of the season, at the end of the season. They've got to do it. You know, it's the only way that they can grow. I mean, they've done brilliantly in every possible way so far, both on the pitch and off it. But the only way they can grow and get to where they want to be, both as a team and as a club, is not just by spending money, but it's by bringing money in. That's the way, you know, that's the way to do it. I mean, just one little aside, when we're talking about Chelsea, who've obviously just lost their manager and Graham Potter, you know, they decided upon a system, and it's lasted, what, 6-7 months? They've spent a ridiculous amount of money on players, and it's going to cost them this summer because they're going to have a big sale of other players to bring kind of money in. I'm just really pleased that, you know, Newcastle have done it the way they're doing it. It's been very sensible. It's been meticulous. And so I think when we're talking about the delays in, if that's the right word, in terms of bringing in those sponsorship things, that they've shown, with everything they've done so far, that they want to get it right, that getting it right is much more important than doing it quickly. And so, you know, you would certainly back them to sort of come up with the right things in the end. But they're absolutely determined that they won't follow that Chelsea model, that they won't follow the Everton model. They want to get up there with the very biggest clubs, but they're, you know, that before they can do that, they have to avoid making some of the mistakes that other clubs have made. And yeah, that's really important.
Absolutely. Right, football finance chat over. We'll be back in just a moment after a message from our new sponsor. Do you have a hectic life covering the world's greatest football club? Have you recently become a father? Do you find yourself sidelined at public events by the Premier League's all-time top goalscorer? If this is a frighteningly specific summary of your life, and it sounds like an overwhelming experience, it sounds like you need our help. Let Pod on the Tyne Industries ease your burden with our fabulous new product, Crease Wow. Piping hot tea on your knackers? Crease Wow. Boxers smeared with cold lasagna? Crease Wow. Baby using your face as a toilet? Crease Wow. Use it anywhere. The toilet of an intercity train. The distant corner of an awards dinner. The floor of a maternity ward. Crease Wow. Helping you cope with the basics of adult life. Terms and conditions apply. Product not guaranteed to improve your relationship with Eddie Howe. So three wins on the trot and that Carabao Cup gloom firmly dispelled. A great time for another little jaunt to the capital. And first up, George, West Ham.
Yes, who've had a little bit of a recovery, a mini recovery in the past couple of weeks. But Newcastle are unbeaten in London this season. So I don't know when, if and when that's ever happened before.
What? That's not right. That can't be true. Is that true?
Yeah, it is true.
That's amazing.
And they've only been defeated twice away from home this season, Newcastle, which is the best record in the Premier League. And all of which is to say that, there was that time, wasn't there, when Newcastle couldn't win for love nor money in London.
That's right, yeah.
And, yeah, so West Ham have picked up a little bit. It's a horrible, I'm doing the game. I'm looking forward to kind of going down there. I'm not looking forward to going to the Olympic Stadium because I think it's just rubbish and it's just a terrible place to watch football. But fully backing Newcastle to go there and get a positive result. Why shouldn't they? They're, you know, they've put that sticky run of form post World Cup to bed now, and everybody will be flying after that win. And yeah, hopefully they can get another good result that then puts West Ham back under pressure.
Well, Chris, David Moyes' men have picked up a little bit. They won on Sunday, obviously, but it's still a very winnable game, isn't it? You would expect Newcastle to go and attack them.
Yeah, our producer Ollie has very annoyingly put a message on the live running order, seeing unbeaten in London in the league in block capitals. Yes, all right, yes.
Thanks for that.
Thank you, yeah.
Totally unnecessary.
But it is still very winnable. I mean, there's an early injury concern about Joe Willock. He obviously went off with what looked like to be a hamstring problem. He was going to have a scan today, so I don't know any more than that yet. He seemed to be confident that he would be okay, but it's obviously with hamstring, if there is a potential tear there, then Newcastle may decide not to risk him to make sure that they're okay going forward. But the fact that Joe Linton is back from suspension is important in that regard. We certainly wouldn't want Joe Willock to be out, but if he is, given the bench that there was and the players who came on Sunday, given Elliot Anderson's impact at Nottingham Forest as well, Newcastle do have options there, and I do fancy him. I don't see Eddie Howe making many changes. He doesn't tend to change a winning side, even with three games inside a week. I think he'll try and keep it as similar as possible to the team who started yesterday, and then again hope for that impact off the bench. But it depends on physically how those players have recovered. But I do think that it's a real opportunity for Newcastle. They have a decent record at the at the London Stadium, actually, since he's been there. I remember Henri Savé scoring a free kick on one of his rare occasions that he ever played for Newcastle.
Did he get two that game? I'm sure. Did he score two goals in that game?
No, he basically was at fault for West Ham's goal.
Right.
And then he scored a really good free kick.
That's right,
So, yeah.
What unusual. A name. One for the ages, that. Newcastle can't be complacent, though, can they, George? West Ham were very good when they came to St James's Park earlier on in the season. They're still a good team.
Yeah, but what was the last time that this Newcastle team were complacent? I mean, I just don't think it's part of their armoury. I mean, of course, be wary of every team in the Premier League. I mean, that's cliché stuff. But you also have to look at the way, you know, the bigger teams have had sort of bad defeats inflicted on them or strange results inflicted on them. I think the thing about this Newcastle is, you know, even allowing for the bit of difficulty they had at the start of the season and then post World Cup, is that they've been incredibly consistent, and you do get a consistency of attitude. You do get a consist, not necessarily of performance, but determination and the way they approach games. They won't be complacent, and in the form they're in, I'd back them to win.
And Brentford, Chris, on Saturday should be an even bigger test, shouldn't it? And Newcastle are going to stay down in the capital in between the games. But Brentford are a decent team, scoring goals, but they also concede quite a few as well. So you never know, there could be a potential for 3 points there as well.
Yeah, they had looked to be an absolutely fantastic match against Brighton on Saturday. I saw the highlights of it, and obviously Brighton had 30-odd opportunities, but Brentford scored three, I think it was their seven chances or whatever it is. They have Ivan Toney, who's in fantastic form still, obviously the former Newcastle striker. Newcastle went there and got a very big win last season, albeit aided by an early red card for Brentford. But I do think that that staying down in the capital makes sense. They're going to be there till late on Wednesday, that they would then go usually on a Friday anyway. So they can train down there, they can keep the squad together, they can manage what they are doing outside of their sort of time at training. I think if you look at this and think if they got 4 points from these two matches, I think that would be a more than decent return, because away games in the Premier League are very difficult, that cliche, but they are. And to get two positive results from those two matches, I think anything more than that would be a huge bonus.
Yeah, I just wanted to say a quick word about Brentford. I'm going to be in the weigh-in for that. I'm looking forward to it. But what a sensational season they've had. And, you know, Brighton get all of the credit, or so much of the credit, which is understandable, because they're a model club in so many ways. And of course, Newcastle have taken not only Dan Burn, but also Dan Ashworth from Brighton, and you know, you then see Graham Potter going to Chelsea, but somehow Brighton managing to not only like recover from that, but thrive, and they're sixth. But Brentford are having an upset. You know, they're a model to all of us in some ways. They're, you know, absolutely batting way above their average, and
they've established themselves, haven't they, George?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's great
to be where they are. I mean, you know, they're incredibly clever. We often talk about Newcastle. You know, if Newcastle want to get to the top, they can't. You know, they can obviously invest now, which is great, and they're prepared to do that. But they can't blitz everybody in the way that, you know, might have been possible once in terms of money. They have to be really clever. And Brentford, you know, they're the model for being clever, to be where they are with a new stadium. And, you know, someone that both Chris and I have met and know, Phil Giles, their director of football, big Newcastle fan. He's done an absolutely brilliant job at Brentford. I think that will hopefully be an absolutely cracking game.
Absolutely. Right, we look forward to those two games with real gusto. Right, then let's finish it off, chaps. Why not? Have we got anything else to say or add before we finish, Chris?
I hope there's no other adverts.
Oh, I can't guarantee there won't be any other adverts, but you never know.
The only thing I would add is that it was good to see that United won on Sunday. I enjoyed that very much, so yes.
So only one United. I would just like to do, if you'll indulge me a second, I would like to say two little quick thank yous. One to John Kinghorn, who is a subscriber to The Athletic and listens to the podcast. I'd just like to say thank you to John for everything that he's done for me and my family in the past few weeks. And similar, I would like to say thank you to the Newcastle box office staff, who I think get a bad deal sometimes. But I've been very well looked after by them. Obviously, as regular listeners will know, Gordon, my stepdad, died not too long ago, but he was a season ticket holder for 30, 40 years. I've transferred that into my name now, so I can use that ticket in the future, which I'm really proud of and very pleased about. And I'd just like to say thank you to the box office staff, in particular Jan, for making my life much easier. So thank you to them.
Lovely stuff. Right then, chaps, let's finish things off. Get yourself over to theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod and pick a subscription to The Athletic and pay just £1.99 a month for your first year. That's it. 3 points for Eddie Howe's top three mags. What a day and what a week it could be as well, with two more games on the horizon. Thanks a lot to everyone for listening. Thank you to you, George, and thanks to you, Chris. Wow. Always a pleasure, never a chore. We'll be back next week. Thanks a lot for listening. From everyone at Pod on the Tyne, take care. Goodbye. But there's no rest for the Willock. Back to London.
That's terrible, isn't it? That is one of the worst puns. So that's not even close. That's not even close to
it's
the,
so
no
bad.
Rest for the Willock.
It's not even close to the thing. But there's no... Oh, fucking. Stop it. Shut up. Stop laughing. The Athletic.